podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Yourself available too. Present across, looking for Thomas!
This is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. For the 60
Hello there, welcome to another New Spurs Order podcast. I'll be your host once again, and I'll be joined by another lovely co-host in the form of, I've got Booker T with me, aka yeah. Tops, aka Tope, aka manager of Touchline Fractus. Although, is that the case this season? I don't know.
No, it's not the case. I'm more just like a sideline coach. Dave's the big gaffer, big Dave. He's the gaffer of the team this season, so...
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just assisting him really this season. But yeah, good to be on. I've not been on in a little while. Just Thursdays and Fridays have been crazy and whatnot. But I have been locking in and listening in to you guys. So yeah, it's nice actually to be back on.
Yeah. It sounds like you've been doing the Lord's work, to be fair, especially with the assisting of Touchline Fracca. It's just good to know that we've got the Spurs influence heading up a cup final. It's stuff from Dave. As the brains of the operation, really. I mean, can't say I'm surprised. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm going to be there right next to him. It's a big one for us. So the season has kind of petered out a little bit, but we finished in the top five, which is positive considering last season, and we're in a cup final. So yeah, Touchline are in the Ilford and District Church League Shield final tomorrow at Wadham Lounge in Walthamstow, playing against AS Athletic. Kickoff is at 10:15. So if anyone wants to come down and support the Touchline boys, there'll be a range of lads from all across the pods and off the pods. So yeah, it'll be a good day if we can get the W for Touchline.
And yeah, it's a big weekend of football for you as a whole then, mate. Obviously, we've now got to preview the big game on Sunday, North London Derby, probably the biggest game probably in the Premier League now. As long as Man City and Liverpool can get over the fake rivalry. And yeah, it just seems to be the most intense one. And there's a lot of weight on it. Obviously, we can stop Arsenal winning the league. We've got the top four race, which is still on, depending on how much you actually care about it or not. And yeah, obviously, we've already taken points off Arsenal already this season, to be fair. But yeah, putting the dent in the title hopes while getting closer to top four, hopefully, is a high pressure game. Obviously, now we've got Ange come up with a few injury updates today, and Porro, luckily, he's going to be fit. Richarlison's available for the squad. I'm not sure if he's going to start or not, but it's almost fitting that I've got you on the pod this evening, considering how opinionated you are about our forward line. And I've been ooming and ahhing about what we can do with it. And there's a lot of speculation. Okay, do we play Richarlison? Do we not? How do you think we should line up as our front, well, with our front three against Arsenal?
How do I think we should line up against Arsenal with a front three?
So enthusiastic.
I don't think Richarlison should start. I feel like it's one thing to be playing at the end of 10 days of not playing. And I think it's another thing to be playing for the first time in almost a month, maybe even more. So just off the basis of match practice, I would not start Richarlison. To be honest with you, I think I would just go with the same front three that we have done in the last few games. Not that it particularly moves me, but I feel like there's lots of different aspects of the attack that kind of could pose some level of threat to Arsenal. I think Arsenal's left-hand side at the back isn't particularly strong. They play Tomiyasu, they have Timber, they have Zinchenko, who haven't really locked that spot down. And I think based off some of the parts of the Chelsea game, I felt like with a bit of pace, maybe they can be got at. So I feel like on that left side for them, which would be Johnson, I imagine there'll be maybe some areas to maybe be able to get at. And even on the other side, I feel like if you keep Ben White pinned in, it's a bit more difficult to allow him to get forward and support Saka the way he does. So I feel like Werner does have the ability to stretch defenders. The only issue is what happens when the ball actually lands in his feet.
Well, we know what can happen. Good and bad. And yeah, I get the impression that they'll probably just let Werner make his runs. And then you can even just step up once it reaches a certain point. Because I find when I watch us sometimes, you can actually see Werner making a really good run and then we just hesitate to release him. And then I think that is mainly due to a lack of trust of what he can do if he's too far away from goal, if you know what I mean. Like if he's making a run kind of off the halfway line and we're being pressed,
mm-hmm.
and he gets through and he's still got at least like 40, like 35, 40 yards to run towards to get to goal, then I think he's just going to be too limited and too isolated to be able to do anything well. So I threw out a vote on the New Spurs Order X/Twitter account and threw up a bunch of combinations for Spurs to potentially play. Heung-min Son, Richarlison and Johnson as the front three got the most votes. Werner, Son, Johnson got the least. Second was Son, Richie and Kulusevski. And my personal favourite got the second least amount of votes. Read into that what you will. And that was Johnson on the left, Son and Kulusevski. And I'm not a fan of Johnson purely because of the Mr. Johnson EastEnders memes. Like, that is something I've got lined up. But I still think he's our best left winger. And he's someone that can actually do something with the ball at his feet. He has basics in ball retention down. He can still do something if he's far away from goal, if he's released on the break. And I think he's got good partnerships with Son and Madison while on the left as well. And I trust Kulusevski to come in and try and recapture some form as he's just become a father. That might inspire him somewhat. Obviously, just his birthday as well. Hopefully, he's not going to be full of cake or something. But yeah, that would be my ideal front three. What are your initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, I am still quite down on Kulusevski. I see. It's not that I don't see the importance of his role as a right winger. Or his ability, I just feel that in his position now, one of the big problems we're having is players having the ability in the final third to do two things, to, in my opinion, adversely affect opposition teams, and two, retain possession in the final third so that we're not sprung on in our rest defence. And I feel like that's been one of the biggest problems I feel like we've had. not only does the ball come straight back, but when we do have it and the sustained amount of possession and areas that we do take the ball in, we don't tend to do enough of it. We're not clinical, we're not effective, we're not decisive in the final third. And that's why I feel like I've been somewhat down, not just on him. He's part of a collective group, but the whole lot of them. So would I feel it would be necessary for him to come in? I can see the benefit in doing so, in his ability to retain possession, in his ability to link well with Porro and Saar on that right-hand channel. Do I think he's going to be effective and decisive in the final third to help us win the game? Probably not. Do I have any evidence that he could possibly do so? I don't.
Not recent evidence, anyway.
Not recent evidence. So he is really someone that I'm on the fence about. Honestly, Johnson has really impressed me. He's really come, or he's really turned a corner, in my opinion. And he's playing, even though I don't fully believe he should be a starter, he's playing in a way that is helping us. Son is in a bit of a rut, and yeah, you know, we all know my feelings on Werner. So I'm, you know, this whole attacking group, I've lost faith in. I'll just say it. I've lost complete faith in what they can do as an attacking group. So I am feeling somewhat apprehensive. What is against the best goalkeeper statistically, against the best defence statistically, against the best defensive midfielder in the league, or second best defensive midfielder in the league statistically. It's going to be rough for our attackers. And I really hope the fans, the atmosphere, the legacy of the game will kind of drive us to perform at a level that I think is above what we've been performing at, like, recently.
You know what? I was, before Arsenal played Chelsea, I was very confident going into this game, and not because of, not just because of just blind faith.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's an advantage for us not having played a game in a while, and obviously Arsenal have played three times in the time since we've last played ours. And you mentioned Son not in a bit of a funk recently. I'm hoping that's just fatigue and the rest can benefit him and obviously mm-hmm. our team as a whole. And then I just see Chelsea, who obviously managed by our lovely ex Pochettino, who I thought he would come in with a very high energy performance with that Chelsea team. And yeah, they might have started off okay, but they got absolutely pammed. And I didn't really see much in the way of fatigue in that Arsenal side, apart from maybe Saka a little bit. But the rest of the team looked really fluid, really energetic. And we've since lost Udogie for the season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now I think it's just all up in the air. But do you think that the rest that we've got and the three games that Arsenal have played can benefit us, or do you think Arsenal would just still be just that bit sharper having played those more games more recently?
No, I think there's definitely an element of sharpness. Definitely. You know, they would have expelled a certain amount of energy against Chelsea and maybe dropped off a little bit, considering they won 4, was it 4-0 or 5-0, whatever it was. 5-0. But also, like, you know, sometimes you can't really deny the importance of momentum. I think momentum's huge. They actually, in my opinion, are way more motivated to win the game than we will be. I don't see any situation where we are more motivated to win this game than they are, apart from the fact that it's a North London derby. We've kind of petered our way through this top four battle. Our form has been somewhat inconsistent. We've muddled through games, even though we've won. And this is a huge game for us to try and turn it around. I feel like Arsenal are a juggernaut at the moment. They've got to a really positive point. You know, they do feel like a well-oiled machine. Defensively, they're solid. Their midfield feels somewhat balanced. Odegaard is hooping out of his life. Like, who's stopping Odegaard?
He's quality.
Who's stopping Odegaard, you know? So at this point, I'm a little bit concerned, but I also feel like the North London Derby is a game that our fans really will try and drive us through. And I feel like having the 10 days off to refresh, to train hard, to look at what we did wrong in the Newcastle game, and also try and maybe even use footage from what we did well in the Arsenal game in the opposing fixture. Mm-hmm. I feel there could be some reason for us to be positive, and there's actually no reason for us to go into this game with any sort of agenda. I don't want us to go into the game with, oh, we can't let them win because we don't want them to win the league, or, oh, we have to play this way to get a certain result. I just want us to go and try and win the game. That's the mentality that I want us to have. And I hope that's the mentality that Ange's kind of put into them these last 10 days in preparation for this game. Because it's a big one. It's a big one. It's an all eyes on me special, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. I've just remembered someone else for us who's got to be banging form, especially for this week ahead prep. And that's Mal Jedernak. those set pieces are low, John.
Against the league's statistically best set piece team. Oh my god! Yeah,
I can see them. I can see them doing that. Yeah, quite effectively. To be fair, I can't remember the last time either Gabriel or Saliba scored from a corner, but. But it looks like they're overdue. Yeah, you mentioned or alluded to kind of how we'd have to kind of set up to best, obviously get the best performance from us. And that kind of moves me to kind of what our midfield could look like.
Yeah.
It's another talking point for me. You've got Bissouma, who's banging out of form, but again, he tends to rise it against Arsenal. He seems to love playing against Arsenal, actually, like loves dunking on them. Sarr seems like the glue that holds it together. I think he's certain. Mm-hmm. You've got Bentancur, Maddison, who we will get onto.
Yeah.
By the way. I think those number six, that number six spot in particular is up for grabs. But what do you think we could look like?
I've been thinking quite a lot about this. Thinking about quite a lot about this, just because, like you have actually said, and I've actually been looking and researching for the game, Bissouma does tend to play well against them. The first fixture was quite a funny one because we did start with our traditional three midfield, Sarr, Bissouma and Maddison. And that game, whilst it felt end-to-end at times and we did kind of pick up heavily in the second half, it was massively, I think, also because Declan Rice wasn't present in that second half. But on balance, I think the matchups are not necessarily... I don't think they're necessarily matchups. I think if you can get beyond Declan Rice, that is where you can cause Arsenal problems because it then requires either Gabriel or Saliba to then come out from their sort of position. And then in also doing that, you need to be able to somehow mitigate this kind of all-action role that Odegaard has. He doesn't tend to pick up a certain area. He is a bit of a metronome in that way. He kind of fills in. Sometimes he comes and gets the ball from deep. He likes to receive the ball in half spaces, in between the lines. And we all know that he's got the ability to shoot and score. So I think our game plan has to really revolve about mitigating the effect or the impact that Odegaard has, but also implementing something on that middle three, Saliba, Gabriel and Rice. And I think if you get amongst and in them, you have the ability. Like one thing that I was really, really impressed with when I watched, and it's apples and pears comparing. But one thing I was so impressed by in the Champions League game, especially the first leg, was the off-the-ball work that Lima and Goretzka did to Arsenal. And they really made that end of that first half and second half hell for Arsenal, especially with Rice and Jorginho. They didn't give them a moment's rest, and everything that they could get, they did get. And in the second leg, Lima absolutely crashed it on Rice. And if you look at the kind of players we're talking about, Lima was a player that Bayern signed for free. And and Rice was a player that Arsenal signed for 100 million. And in the second half, especially in the second half against Arsenal in the second leg, you know, he completely crushed it on him. So I think it's actually super important that we can somehow show some of his weaknesses, get him running, get him turning around and having to chase players or chase spaces. But also massively, in my opinion, the key to stopping Arsenal, I think, is mitigating Odegaard. And by doing so, you're going to need huge performances from people like Sarr. You're going to need huge performances from someone like Bissouma. And I feel like this is where the game could massively be balanced or could be hinged, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just difficult when you know we or Ange aren't going to set up in a way which is going to directly look to just try and stop one player. I mean, even Dyer said it and alluded to this as well in his interview and said, you know, doesn't really do any tactical work, which, you know, just essentially means he doesn't really do prep for opposition. He just concentrates on the idea, on the ideal of how he wants his teams to play. And you've got the freedom that Odegaard gets as well. He doesn't particularly tend to chill in one particular channel or deeper forward. He just goes everywhere and seems to have the engine to do so without getting tired or injured. Although it did look a little bit leggy against Bayern, but again, like that could have just been through all the diligent work that Lima and Goretzka done. Also aided by the way Tuchel set Bayern up, right? Because it was a kind of lower to mid-block type thing. The distances were very good in that as well. There was a lot of discipline and diligence in that performance at their own stadium, whereas I just think we're going to be a lot more... we're going to be looking to get on the front foot a lot more.
Yeah.
And, I think... yeah.
No, sorry, continue. Sorry.
I just think it's just going to be down on one of our own Maverick players to try and rise it at the same time and, you know, just try and get the spirit of Van der Vaart into his number 10 shirt and then equally try and rise it, or could even say rice it. Anyway.
I think it's going to be a very interesting battle. Like a lot of people know, lots of our attacks as well have been, lots of our goals conceded and areas in which we've conceded possession quite frequently has been our flanks. Opponents tend to channel lots of their attacks, especially through both our right and left, which is, I suppose, it's like a indictment of the way we play in terms of how many players we push forward in the channels, especially because of the inverted fullbacks. But also, it requires a lot of work and coverage of space from Bissouma, Van de Ven and Romero. So I think it's also important, you know, that we kind of make sure that our spacings are correct, because Arsenal have players on the flanks as well that have the ability to hurt us. Both Saka, Martinelli, who's not in great form. These are very quick players, very good in transition, I think, to an extent as well. Havertz is also very good in transition. So I think it's just making sure that we don't allow ourselves or give this team the kind of areas that we've conceded goals quite frequently from, but also in order for them to gain some level of advantage in the match, especially without the pace of someone like Udogie, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's, I think, two key battles, as well as the other ones, obviously. But I want to prioritise two in particular, because I think both of our right-hand side, are going to be quite vulnerable. Obviously, us being able to attack down our right-hand side has been an issue. But at the same time, Arsenal seem to have just a little bit of an issue with left-back. You don't really have a cemented player there. You've got Tomiyasu, who's still just recently come back with injury. Mm-hmm. Sinchenko practically threw the game against Aston Villa a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Kiwior, who seems okay defensively, but is a little bit immobile. Who, I mean, yeah, he'd probably do a good job against Kulusevski, actually. But how do you kind of see our right-hand side kind of planning out against their left?
Our right-hand side against their left. So their left would be, yeah, one of those defenders. And then probably, I'd see it either Trossard or Martinelli. I don't feel too worried about that right-hand side because I feel having Saar back to some extent provides us that defensive cover. I feel like he does a lot of the dog work. And he doesn't mind doing a lot of the dog work. I feel like if Kulusevski was to start, he doesn't mind doing a lot of the dog work as well, and he's kind of proficient at doing it. And I feel like Johnson's also not bad at doing that as well. The only person that I would really worry and has taken the drop in form, maybe it could be injury, maybe it could be fatigue, is Porro. I don't think Porro's played particularly well. And I feel like for him to really turn around this form, he would have to have an above average game based on how he's performed recently. I can't envisage that he won't start if he's been declared fit. So if he does start, then it's important that he has a good game because he hasn't recently, to be honest with you. And Trossard is in some decent level of form.
That he is. And then now you've got their right-hand side. And obviously that will be causing an issue for us because, you know, who's going to be our left back?
I think it's quite easy. I think it's quite easy.
For me, I would definitely have Emerson Royale. But
oh wow, really?
You're taking Daddy Davis?
Yeah, I am.
Ben Davis.
I really am. Yeah.
He could do a job against a fatigued Saka.
I'm a little bit on the side of. When I think about the game that was played in the first game, Udogie has literally said in the press, in the media, that his hardest opponent he's played in Premier League has been Saka. And I feel like Saka is going to want to try and get at us. Most of their ball receptions are through Saka. Most of their attacks are built through Saka. Even if it comes back to Odegaard and the recycled run, it starts with Saka. And this is a situation that I feel like this is a kind of game where I would actually prefer for Ange not to invert. I'm actually happy for Ange to just let Davies take on Emerson. And I feel like he won't find himself in areas that he's not uncomfortable with. He's going to be very simple with his passes and he's going to find the passing lanes that are kind of easy to him. And I don't think he'll put himself under unnecessary pressure. But now think about it. Emerson could do a job there because he is very good, in my opinion, defensively proficient. I don't think when he's been required to do anything defensively, he's fucked it up. My issue with him is more his positioning as an inverted and also him losing the balls in areas that I don't really wouldn't like him to lose. So, you know what? I can see the benefit in possibly having Emerson there, but just as a steady Eddie, safe pair of hands, I would probably more so go with Davies. And also because it's a more natural fit. A left-handed centre-back, left-footed, left centre-back, left-footed, left-back.
Okay, yeah. So my thinking was Emerson, because again, defensively sound. I think he's comfortable on the ball when he moves centrally and not in a passing sense, though. He'll just draw fouls without or just play to someone like Madison. Quite simply, a little 5 yard.
Mm-hmm.
And once, obviously, he's in a certain position, you're coming against Saka where Saka's coming onto his strong foot and obviously onto Emerson Royale's strong foot also. I mean, that could also work against Chelsea. We'll kind of briefly preview that as well. But yeah, I think that could favour Emerson Royale. And it's just, I mean, the only game I've been to see live this season has been the one against Crystal Palace away, and that might have probably been maybe even the best game. I was thinking it might have been the worst, but it might have been the best game for me to watch in terms of who could play backup left back the best. And Ben Davis started that game and got torn to pieces by Jordan Ayew. And he then got hooked at half time, and we immediately got back on the front foot just purely because Emerson Royal was winning his duels. He was being able to track back, winning his duels, and that just get true. Us back on the front foot, and he kept the ball when he needed to.
I do agree with you on that point. I do actually. Yeah. That's an interesting one. I'll be interested to see how that'll be a bit of a toss up in terms of how he can. Who he decides to go for and why he decides to go for them, because Saka will be he'll be a handful. He'll be a real handful that day. And we need to really just dust off these ghosts from last season's performance at home against Arsenal. Yeah,
we were never in that game.
Never.
So, did we say who was your preferred number eight?
My preferred number eight is Sar. My preferred number eight is Sar, and my number six is going to be Bissouma.
Okay.
My preferred is going to be Bissouma and Sar. I feel like these two players both have the quality. I feel like they both have the quality to turn it up if they absolutely need to. I don't believe that they will be overruled by the atmosphere, the opposition. I feel like given the rest, given the concentration and the ability to prepare for the game, and obviously having the tape from the game we played against them last, which I think we played very well in large spells of that game, I feel like, yes, it would be smart to go with them again, plus Madison. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I would just firm it. I mean, boy, if Bissouma plays poor in this game as well, then I really have no words. Because he's going to get his chain snatched by Højbjerg at this rate. And he's only got like three games to go. And Højbjerg's out the door as well. So, I mean,
when I listened to the last week's pod and I heard Yao's comments on Bissouma, I'm not going to lie, I was flabbergasted. Completely shocked. Because he just played at such a level that's just not his level. And someone could look at it and be like, maybe this is his level. Maybe people didn't really have that much of an eye on him at Brighton. And actually, these few games that we've had, that people kind of watched him and he performed well, these few games at the end of the season, like I've said many times in the group, they could be just random peaks and troughs of form. And actually, what we're seeing now is him as a player. But I do still stand by the fact that he isn't a traditional sit, and I feel like he is being asked to do things that he maybe isn't innately used to doing. It doesn't come naturally to him. And I actually feel sometimes he will be better as an eight, but I still don't think he has the physical off-the-ball capabilities, awareness abilities as such. So it does leave you between a rock and a hard place. We'll get into this in another time. But I think his position and his role in the squad needs to be looked at long term, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Without being too negative or too crazy takey, I just think his position in the squad needs to be looked at. If you look at the kind of profiles that have performed kind of well in that eight area, is he better technically than Bentancur? Not sure. Is he better technically than Kulu? Not sure. Is he better off the ball than Sar? Not sure. Okay, does he have any other outstanding attributes that differs him to the others? He's tenacious. He can be a goal threat, but hasn't been a goal threat. There's lots of things I need to look at, but I feel like long-term, maybe we should start to be thinking about where his actual role in the team is.
Very fair. Another person that I want to look at, want to talk about, is James Maddison.
Yes.
Been poor of late, can't really put the thing, well, can't quite put a finger on as to why. As he's had quite a bit of time since his injury, it looks like it's just maybe even a case of a tiny bit of complacency, believing his own hype, etc. I was trying not to overthink him. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't notice him doing these outside the right foot spamming of passes and crosses at times as well. It's something that he's, again, just started to do while trying to kind of recover from this injury. And yeah, I don't know. I just see it as a sign of complacency because I see how good he is with his left foot as well. Like he's almost ambidextrous, almost to the point of what Son is. So it's a weird one. What do you make of Maddison at the moment?
He's in poor form. You know, all of his contemporaries seem to be performing at a bit of a better level at the moment. Odegaard, Bruno, Eze.
Even Bruno. But I almost missed that.
Yeah, I honestly believe, like, at this point, when I look at the way he's playing, I just feel that he's not affecting games. And when I say playing well, I really do just mean affecting games. He's not affecting games in ways that he was at the beginning. And I feel like some of these other players, Foden, Bruno, Eze, Odegaard, these guys are actively affecting games in positions that are very similar to James Maddison's. And at the moment, he's just not in a good run of form. He's not getting into the games the way he has been or he was previously. I feel like it's weird. He's kind of got super petulant, which is something I used to see about him.
And yes, that's another sign. That's another sign.
Petulant is like, you know, it's kind of childish, but it's not, because it almost feels like it's born from frustration as opposed to him being an actual child. He's not getting into games. He's not influencing games. He's not affecting games. And because of that, it's getting annoyed. It's getting him annoyed because he's getting to areas and he's losing the ball or his passes aren't getting off. And obviously, you know, he's a threat. He's our number 10 and he's a player that people will try and frustrate and get at and nibble at. And this is something I always say about the top players. You need to be able to understand that if you are a top player at this level, you won't be able to go through games freely without any sort of level of, what's the word I'm looking for? There won't be a magnifying glass on your game, you know. You have to come under some level of scrutiny, even if it's for one game or if it is for 10. And it's just alarming that for the lots of periods of this season when we were very good and we were very positive, he was at the middle of everything. And at this moment that we're muddling through and getting through games and not performing particularly well, it's no surprise that he isn't really getting the form or he isn't really getting the play that he has been. So I'm a little bit, I mean, like I mentioned in the group, I don't believe this notion of him being not match fit, because I feel like there's been a significant amount of time that he's been in the team since the injury. I feel like he's played a significant amount of minutes in the almost 2 month period in which he's returned. And I feel that he's just going through a bit of a bad spell. One thing that really just kind of doesn't really, I don't know, one thing that I'm a little bit like, I don't understand is if something isn't going well, especially at this level, it's actually okay to try and change it and improve it. And I don't understand why then, in that case, someone like Kulu or even Lo Celso haven't been given the opportunity to try and change it up or at least give Maddison the opportunity to come into a game later on and maybe influence it in a way that he can. And I know that he's super important to us, but there's lots of things that I've just been a little bit down on him. And I also just feel as well that, like, this drop in form is not good timing, because you've got 6 games left. You've got the Euros very soon. You're 26. You need to get yourself on
Southgate that plane. Doesn't like you as it is, so...
You know, need to get yourself on that plane. And the way I see it, it's like it feels very bipolar, to the point where at the beginning of the season, the first half of the season, you were on the tip of everyone's tongue. Everybody was saying Maddison for England. Maddison was getting shouts for early starts or player of the season, early starts or for signing of the season so far. and he had this unfortunate injury, kept him out for some time, and now it's almost, it feels like the opposite. He's not influencing games. He's not affecting games. He's not grabbing games by the scruff of the neck. And ultimately, that's affecting not only the team, but in my opinion, it's affecting his long-term aspirations for the England team, because this would be an amazing feat for him to try and take us into the top four and obviously cement his place on that plane to Germany for the Euros. So I'm a bit concerned, but I'm not super worried. Like, this is a player of extreme high technical quality. This is a player who can really switch the game with a little bit of anything, and he has that in him. So can he do it? Absolutely, he can. Do I want him to do it this weekend? Absolutely. I think it's up to him, really, to kind of just pick himself up. A number of players in the team really put themselves up from their poor form, and just to try and deliver in the moments that matter the most.
Yeah, I mean, Aston Villa recently, I thought it was very good. So away from home, and this was a game where we needed to win, we needed to perform. Obviously, Madison was crucial in that, so hopefully we can to replicate that. I like how you alluded to probably Ange should have probably taken more responsibility on Madison's form. Like you said, like, we could have easily started Kulusevski there and started Brennan Johnson on the right.
Yeah.
Kulusevski actually hasn't had a bad game for us starting centrally, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So, again, you kind of hit two birds with one stone on that one. And it's not like he wasn't kind of drop-worthy and whatever else. So yeah, it is a good point. We could even see a little flash from someone else who's been training with the first team. Although I highly doubt this will happen, but we've got 16-year-old Mikey Moore who's been training with the first team. They even put a clip out of him earlier scoring a goal in first team training, and Ange Postecoglou was asked about him in the press conference and said, you know, it's a good opportunity for him and he hasn't looked out of place. Could he make the bench?
No, I don't think so. I think, like you said in the presser, you know, he's been getting some outstanding reports about him. Him and people like Tyrese Hall have been absolutely smashing it.
I love Tyrese Hall. I've only really watched him twice, but he looks the tidiest.
Yeah, these are really, really good, fresh, young players. Like the debate that we were having in the group earlier on this week. I don't feel right now it would be necessary to put him in. I feel like part of the development of young players is actually just having them train regularly with the first team and being in and around the first team sort of environment, which kind of just prepares them, hopefully, for that sort of feeling or that sort of opportunity in the future. And also, it just gives you, you know, a little bit of a chance for you to show out, to pump your chest a little bit and show what your ability is and what you can do. And the fact that he's been training with them regularly is a positive thing. I'm all for Mikey Moore being involved in first team sessions. And I think a lot of these young players, they should be. I know a fair few of them in the past have been, players like Santiago and Donnelly, Divine before his loan, Scarlett, John, lots of these players, they're all heavily involved in first team training at some point during their scholarship. So actually, I think it's a really good stepping stone for getting them ready and preparing them for these sort of steps. But do I think it would be a good idea for this weekend? I think it would. I just don't see what it would benefit from him having sit on the bench in a big sort of clash against our deadliest rivals.
I might not just sit on the bench. Although, yeah, you probably would. I was going to ask you something else then. Yeah. I was, and it's completely slipped my mind. Gosh. Hopefully I'll remember it in the next minute or so. But I wanted to get your score prediction / result prediction. It seems like a kind of boring topic and a question to ask on every podcast, but it's always good to see just how confident people are. Because if you had asked me before the Chelsea game, I would have said 3-1 Spurs. And now I'm thinking I might even take a a draw. I think it'll be 2-2.
I'm apprehensive.
Oh, we knew that.
All week, I've been thinking we're getting beat. All week, I've been thinking we're getting beat. And irrespective of the Chelsea game, I was thinking, based on what was last year, they're going to want to come and run amok again. But I feel like the first game at Emirates kind of showed me that we can perform against them. And generally, our performances against the big four sides tend to be positive. You know, only losses against Chelsea, wins and draws against United, draws against City, draws against Arsenal, wins against Liverpool. So in that sense, it does give me some level of confidence that we do tend to rise it in these bigger games. So that would indicate to me that we could probably get a draw. I think this Arsenal team will be desperate to win the game. So we have to match them toe for toe in order for that not to happen.
Means more. Toe for
toe. It will have to mean more. Yeah, in typical Coppen fashion, it will have to mean more.
I just remember the question I was going to ask you, and I know every player path can be different for every other reason, but did Kobbie Mainoo get a loan at United before breaking into the first team?
No. Kobbie was one of these... he was one of these United Carrington...
Obviously good.
...wonder kids. He has been pretty much United through and through. Just plied his trade there when he was one of the standout guys who came through. I used to listen actually to... I still do listen to Mugger, the Man United leg of Touchline Fracas podcast group, and... Honestly, Reams used to talk about this guy so much. to the point where I was always like... And he used to talk about him to the level of Rashford and He Who Shall Not Be Named, which I was always quite surprised, because I think those two are like top talents coming through. And it didn't surprise me one bit. When I actually finally sat down and watched him, and I was like, this kid is very good.
Okay, let's get Tyrese Hall involved, at least in first team training. He's 18.
We can go on about this because we all debate in the group about this, but I've always been of the mentality, if you're a young player and you're good enough, you need to be given the chance to sink or swim. And if you sink, that's okay. You go back. You can come back stronger. But if you swim, then that becomes your base level. And that is the level in which you can build on. And if you look at all of the young players that have come through the league that have actually done so, they've done it just fine.
Quite a lot of season.
Saka did it. Mason Mount did it. He who shall not be named did it. Like Kobe. Trent did it. Like Kobe did it. Loads of these players. You need to give them the opportunity. And if you don't give them the opportunity, then you won't know. And I understand that the jump in level is high. It is. It is a steep jump. It is a very steep jump. But you need to be able to put some of these guys in these positions and you need to be able to see if they're able of handling it. And some of them aren't. We just have to be honest. Some of them are not.
Yeah, and that's fair. And there's only really one way of finding out. And I just look at the teams in and around us this season who have actually given young players a chance, although mostly through circumstantial reasons. Mainly Liverpool, obviously through Kwanzaa and Connor Bradley. They've both swam. Yeah.
You look at the fella that's up at Newcastle, Lewis Miley. That's a kid.
Who's the other one that played left wing back against us recently?
Was it good.
Just the name escapes me.
It wasn't the fella at Brighton, was it? No.
I just can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was very good. You got Man City with Rico Lewis, who obviously was playing last season as well. Oscar Bob.
Yeah.
they had obviously Cole Palmer start the season really well and sold him, but look what he's done. He's another one you could say who's just been thrown into first team football straight from.
I mean, some of these guys
leading the Golden Boot.
You can kind of like, okay, there's a bit of a different caveat because they're being, their football education is extremely thorough. They're in these top academies around top players that aren't actually bred there, but also brought in. So,
Elliot Anderson. Sorry.
Yeah. And lots of these players that are, that you can kind of, so some of them have caveats, but generally I'm of the opinion that if you give these lads a chance, you can see if they can swim. And if they can, you just let them, you let them be, you let them develop, you give them minutes here and there. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, like, yeah, we are digressing, but when I think of like some of what's happening at like Liverpool or like City or even like Manchester United, when you give these players the opportunity, some of them come in and it genuinely means more because they are academy players. You look at Kambala, you look at Garnacho, you look at Mainu, you know, you look at these guys and you think, these guys, they understand and they want to understand what it means to play for the club that they've been developed at. So actually, you kind of know that these guys are going to be giving you as much as they can if they are of the required level. And sometimes it's easy to see if they're not. Like, ideally, I don't think Garnacho is at the level, but he's still performing because he wants to as a United trainee. Whereas someone like Kobbie Mainoo, his trajectory has completely gone through the roof because you now see that not only is he a good young player, but he clearly is at the level to the point where he is now being looked at to play at the Euros. His year,
he's a shoo-in for the Euros, in my opinion.
His year
shoo-in
has completely changed, and that is because one, he's been given the space and he's been given the confidence to do so, but also he's been given the chance. And sometimes it literally is just about being given the chance.
Exactly. And there's obviously been times where we could have given younger players more minutes, even if it's off the bench. Like, obviously, Donnelly and Scarlett have had little cameos. And yeah, you just feel like there could have been a window for Santiago to play 5-10 minutes. Someone like Ashley Phillips or Dorrington earlier on in the season when we had no centre-backs. But yeah, we won't digress too much. It's another conversation for another day. Just quickly as well, how do you think we'll do against Chelsea? Because I saw what you put across to the newspapers or the Twitter chat, and it will probably happen. It was a video of Barcelona's prime lineup, and it'll see that, yeah, this is what Chelsea will turn into when they're at home to Spurs. Conor Gallagher is going to put on an absolute clinic, isn't he?
Oh my god. Listen.
Price of the break.
I do not know what's going to happen against that Chelsea match because I'm so conflicted. That Chelsea team is so bad. But for some reason, when we go to Stamford Bridge, we just seem to cack our pants. So I don't really know what I want to think. And I saw some alarming pictures today of three first-team players who look like they're in training again. Palmer, Nkunku, Reece James.
Nkunku's not playing. He is not playing a single minute. I can look at that man and say he's definitely not. He's made out of quavers as well, for a start.
That Chelsea game, I have no idea, but honestly, I'm actually looking more to that game than this game against Arsenal.
I think we'll win against Stamford Bridge, though.
I need that back in blood. I need that 4-0, that 9 men, 4-1.
That Jackson hat-trick.
I need that back in blood. I am looking forward to that match so much. Like, listen, no. You can't spend a billy and get away with what they're getting away with. You can't. You cannot do it.
They actually are getting away with it, though. The media machine is just, it's just probably the best there's ever been because you don't see them get half as much shit as they should.
I'm telling you, Owen, I need them packed. That game in Stamford Bridge, oh boy. You don't want to talk to me if we win that match.
Oh, I do. They won't. Anyway, thank you very much for joining me this evening. Again, they love hearing about your guys on the forward line, and I love just recording podcasts with you, mate. It's been a while, but it's been good. Again, for a new Spurs order, check out X. We're still on there regularly, TikTok regularly, on Instagram. Check us out there at New Spurs Order. The streams are out most Friday evenings now, but I've seen by the looks of it, and the audio every Saturday morning. Again, Tops, thank you. And that's for now. Come on, you Spurs. Big two games ahead. Let's get it. Peace.
Come on, you Spurs.
Yourself available too. He's in the cross, looking for Thomas.
This is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. Kulusevski!
Sports Social Podcast Network.